All right, the primary thing that I want to talk about is the sixth lesson, the one on the article and the adjectives and everything. And the thing about the article, and of course, when we're talking about the article, we're talking about the word we use for the. Now, in English, you have a and an, which are also articles. They're indefinite articles. A man, an apple, a and, those are indefinite articles. Greek does not have an indefinite article. So if you were to see just the noun by itself, you would assume it is indefinite unless there is something else with that word man to identify it as a certain man. Then in English you would say the man, but it wouldn't be the article. You could not have the article. And so unless you have something else that identified that as a definite man, then you just say a man. So, all right, you got the article, you got the adjectives. And so in both of these, you've got that to be concerned with. Now, in both of those also, the article and the adjectives, the endings are going to be the same as the endings of your nouns that you already studied. You have your nouns of the second declension and your nouns of the first declension. The nouns of the second declension, generally masculine, and it ends with os. So you'd have like anthropos, anthropou, anthropo, anthropon, anthrope, anthropoi, anthropon, anthropos, anthropous. So your endings are os, u, o, an, e, and oi, on, ois, us. Those are the same endings that you have in masculine, the masculine article. And of course, your article can be masculine or feminine or neuter. But the endings are generally the same as that of the nouns you've already looked at. And you remember then that in the first declension, that's your feminine nouns, and there's more variation there in the way those end. If your nominative singular ends in alpha, and it's after any letter except epsilon, iota, or rho, then that's going to be changed to a and eta, like dogza, dogzais, dogze, dogzon. It'll be changed in the genitive and dative. So you've got a kind of a wrinkle there about it. Now, you won't have that. Well, yeah, you will too. Yeah, you wouldn't have that if you had an adjective and and it was not an epsilon, iota, or rho. It would change like that. But now, I don't remember experiencing that very much in translation or anything like that. Usually, it's more straightforward in your adjectives and everything. But that's what it's going to be. On paragraph 62, learn the declension of Mikros, small, and of Dikaios, righteous. Note that long alpha, not theta, stands in the feminine of these adjectives when the preceding letter is a rho or a vowel. So it gives the same rule as is true of the nouns in the first declension. It's just that I don't often see that happen. More often than not, you're going to have like the paragraph there at the bottom of 33, agathe. You're going to start off with eta, and it's going to be agathe, agathes, agathe, agathein. So, like in the word graphe, a scripture. Graphe, graphes, graphe, graphein. So your adjective is going to be based on that. So the basic idea is that the endings of your first and second declension nouns are going to be the same as the endings in your adjectives. So if you have those endings, then you'll be able to, you know, you won't have to learn any new endings. So that helps. But the thing that is so important about the adjective is learning the positions, like the attributive and the predicate positions. Now, there are a few statements in the book where the writer really makes that clear. Like, look in your preface, Roman numeral 9. In the preface in Roman numeral 9, right at the top of the page, he has, the treatment of the participle, moreover, has been thrust as far forward as possible in the book, in order that ample time may be allowed for practicing the usages which it involves. Now, that's not what I'm pointing out. This is page 9, Roman numeral 9.
Got the wrong edition.
Okay, it's not. All right, it's in the preface. All right, yeah, okay, because it's good for you to see this. The next sentence is the one that I wanted you to see. Experience shows that in learning to read New Testament Greek, the participle is almost the crux of the whole matter. Now, the participle is introduced in a later lesson than the one we're looking at here, lesson 6. But the thing about the participle is that this difference between the attributive position and the predicate position, such as I have with adjectives, is extremely important. Absolutely. So just like he says there, in learning to read the New Testament Greek, the participle is almost the crux of the whole matter. All right, now look on, in this lesson on the article, lesson 6, look in paragraph 73. Now, that ought to help you out, Brad, because he has it divided into paragraphs. So paragraph number 73, if you will look in paragraph number 73, and probably it's page 37 in your guys' books, the last sentence in that paragraph 73 says, if this advice be heeded, a solid foundation will have been laid for the mastery of a large part of Greek syntax. Now, that again goes back to this distinction between the attributive and the predicate position. And before I'm just trying to show you how much he emphasizes that. Let me show you one more, and then I will explain what attributive and predicate position is. Page 111. Here are three quotations we've just picked out. All right, this is paragraph 239, Brad. Paragraph 239, page 111. And the entire paragraph is emphatic. So, Trevor, are you having any trouble finding paragraph 239? Mm-hmm. Your paragraph's our number?
Yes.
The importance of this lesson and the two following lessons can hardly be overestimated unless the student understands thoroughly the use of participles. It will be quite impossible for him ever to master the later lessons or to read the Greek Testament. The participle is quite the crucial matter in the study of Greek. Okay, now it's time for us, without any further ado, to talk about attributive and predicate. So, now, this is back in lesson 6.
When would we have gotten to the participle?
In this number of lessons later.
Much later.
Even in this two or three that we're going to deal with here, I don't know if we'll be able to do much with it. But it'd be several lessons later. Like, this is page 34, 5, 6, and that would be page 111.
Right.
But, alright, the attributive position, and let's see, on paragraph 68 in your books, is where we'll begin to talk about that. And where it begins to, alright, what it's saying is, take the sentence, the good word. We're modifying word by the term good, and we're giving word an attribute. It is the good word. We are attributing something to the word. So this is why he's using the attributive position. So in your books now, this is really important to see the difference. You have to have the article. If you don't have the article, you cannot make this distinction. So paragraph 68, adjectives are used in two distinct ways. Number one, attributively, and two, predicatively. In the phrase, the good word, the adjective good is an attributive adjective. It tells what word we are mentioning. We are not mentioning all words or any word, but only the good word. On the other hand, in the sentence, the word is good, the adjective good is a predicate adjective. With the verb is, it makes an assertion about the subject, the word. So, even though the bottom line may be same there, it's extremely important to learn the difference between those two positions, and especially is it important in connection with participle. Because, you see, this is a lesson on adjectives. The participle is a verbal adjective. Now, I thought about this. Let me illustrate it to you. I'll go ahead and borrow a little bit from that participle lesson. If you said, would it be common to say, the running man is going by again? Is that the way you would normally express that? No. In English, how would you commonly express the statement there, at least as you perceive that I'm getting at? The running man is going by again.
I'm just the runner.
All right, we might say the runner is going by again. If we went ahead and maintained the words, we might say the man who has been running. See, we wouldn't say the running man. And yet in the expression, the running man, running is a verbal adjective. Now, on the other hand, we would say running water is pure. Or something like that, which of course is not true. But running water, we would not say water which runs. It's funny, isn't it, how using just running there, some uses we would not ever do in English, even though you could. But in that example of the running man, see, we wouldn't do it like that. We'd say like the man who runs or the man who is running. Now, that's a very good parallel to the way that it would be done in Greek. But this attributive participle, I mean, attributive position. All right. So what you have to do is say like, take ha, which is the nominative article the. That's masculine, nominative, singular. Ha, agathos, which is good, and then logos. So we'll just take those. Ha, agathos, logos would mean simply the good word. See, that's very simple. That's exactly the way it would be in English. But in Greek, you could also say, you could say ha logos, ha agathos, which would be the word, the good word. Of course, in their minds, there wouldn't be any substantial difference. They're still getting the idea that you're still saying basically the good word. You're still using it in the attributive position because you're telling which word, the good word. So it's the good word, ha agathos logos, or ha logos, ha agathos.
But you have to repeat the article.
Yeah, and the article comes, that's right. And the article comes before the adjective. Whether the adjective is placed after the noun or whether the adjective is placed before the noun, you've got ha agathos logos, or you've got ha logos ha agathos. The adjective has to have the article before it to be attributive. Now, in the predicate, you could say agathos halagos. And that would convey good is the word, even though is not expressed in the Greek. But it would convey the idea you're making a statement about the word to the Greek mind. Agathos halagos, you're saying good is the word. Or suppose you said halagos agathos. The word, good, is understood. So in your book there, it sets that forth real clearly, but I think it's good for you to run it through your mind and see the difference there. So ha agathos logos, the good word, or ha logos ha agathos, still the good word. The word, the good word, see, or the word, the good one. Agathos halagos is good is the word, or halagos agathos. The word is good, with the is being understood there. So that actually is, in a way, so far as the syntax is concerned, the most important part of this lesson. Other than, aside from learning vocabulary and stuff like that. Learning that about that attributive and predicate position is extremely important. And so what we're trying to do in this lesson and in one or two more is just try to give you some of the basic fundamentals for study on your own to be able to learn it. So in paragraph 68 and 69, he talks about the very things that I have been telling you about, and then he summarizes it. He summarizes it in paragraph 72 and shows the attributive position, you see, using the very words that we have been looking at, and then the predicate position of the adjective. So if you will look at it, you will see that the difference is that in the predicate position, the article does not come before the adjective. In the attributive position, it does come before the adjective. You've got basically two different ways of forming each one of them. But the thing that stays consistent is that in the attributive position, the article must be before the adjective. In the predicate position, it is not. Now, you can do the same thing with participles. Except when you start doing that, if you're going to talk about the apostle, ha, apostolos, and you're going to be talking about the saying these things, the saying these things apostle. Well, you can see right there, you wouldn't ever translate it, the saying these things apostle. You'd be translated the apostle who is saying these things. But you would do that not with a relative clause as we do in English. You would do it with a participle. And so you would be like, you could say, ha legon tauta apostolos. Legon is the participle, and it is the nominative there, nominative singular. So saying, lego, I say, ha the legon saying tauta, which is a pronoun, which means these things. It's a neuter plural. So it'd be these things. So that's just an illustration, but I'll look at that later a little bit more with you. But right now, we need to look at some things here a little more closely. Let's go back to paragraph 63 on the declension of the article. And looking at the declension of the article, you will notice, just glancing at it, that one of the cases is missing. Vocative. In that you don't say, hey, the Trevor. You just don't use the article when you're addressing someone. So, you don't have the vocative. So it's, ha. Now then, the little difference in the ending, in that, like, you might expect the article in the nominative singular, masculine nominative singular, to be has. You know, cause that's the end of your masculine noun, but no. It's just ha. Now the others, tu, to, ton. The endings are the same. U, o, and on. And then in the feminine, he, tes, te, tain. Now in that situation, the ending is the same. Graphe, graphes, graphe, graphane. You see, it is exactly the same. And then in the neuter, like if you had the word for gift, doron has a nu on the end, but in the article it doesn't have the nu on the end. It just has ta. Ta, tu, to, ta. So in the neuter, the nominative and the accusative are the same form. But I believe you can see that it wouldn't take a great deal of work to get that down, because if you have your endings of your nouns. That's why I've told, I told you in the class that you have to have the endings of those nouns down. So before you set in to go past lesson 5 and into 6, make sure in your study that you've got those endings of those nouns down really well. Because otherwise, you're going to be over your head. So learn those. Then you won't find a great deal of trouble to learn this lesson here. And you see why he has the article and the adjective in this same lesson. Because he can't make this point about attributive position and predicate position without both the article and the adjective. Also, the endings they share pretty well in common. Makes it a logical thing to introduce them both in the same lesson. And I think you've already perceived it, but adjectives, including the article, agree with the nouns that they modify in gender, number, and case. I think you pretty well knew that anyhow. Okay.
And does the adjective always... I know it can follow, but is it either in front of or behind the noun, or can it be like far at the opposite end of the sentence?
Well, there are circumstances where, because of things like a participle, it can be somewhat separated from it. But usually it's not going to be, I wouldn't say from one end of the clause to the other, you're not going to find it separated that widely. It would be separated only by the modifiers, but sometimes the modifiers can be pretty complicated. You can even have a prepositional phrase used as a modifier, and in that case you might have it separated by several words.
So is that the reason for having the suffix match, so you can find what it goes to?
That's partly it, but I tell you what, Trevor. See, from our standpoint, we're looking and we're trying to impose reasons on a language which to them grew naturally, and it was just their language. And to say they invented it so that they could tell, no, it wasn't. It just grew. It just developed, and it happened to develop that way. So now with us trying to learn it, we'd say, boy, that's helpful. Well, yeah, it is. there's almost no example of anybody who invented a language. Is it Esperanza? Is that the name of the language that I think?
That sounds close, at least. I can't remember.
Anyway, if I have the name right, I think that's one that was kind of invented. And then modern Hebrew was sort of reinvented in Israel, going back and using the classical Hebrew and then some of the rabbinical Hebrew and everything. And they just pretty well restored a living language. Even though Hebrew had never stopped being spoken by certain people. But I've read that statement more than once. But usually, just in almost all cases, nobody invented a language. And they did not invent the rules as they went. It just happened.
Right.
All right, so these articles... you've got your vocabulary. All right, let's look at something else in this lesson, the substantive use of an adjective. Now, this is not only true of adjectives, but it's true of participles as well. When you're using an adjective, and see, this is a thing that you don't have in English, because we do not distinguish between the masculine and the feminine in our adjectives. There's so little inflection left in English, especially declension in nouns and adjectives and things like that. But because you do have the adjective in Greek does have masculine gender, feminine gender, or so on, and it is denoted by the ending. Now, like if I were talking about the good woman, I'd use good. If I'm talking about the good man, I'd just use good. But in Greek, you would distinguish between the two uses of good by the endings. Now, that means that you don't really have to write man. If I put ha'agathos, the masculine implies the man. So I'd say the good man. If I said ha'agathe, using the feminine, then it would be the good woman. So in that case, in that instance, you'd have to be sure that you're not using another word that would maybe be nearby and would be feminine, would be kind of confusing. So, as he explains there in paragraph 75, agathos may mean a good man, agathē, a good woman, agathon, a good thing. See, agathon is neuter, agathoi, good men, and so on. Sometimes in the masculine, sometimes in the plural masculine, the English language, like Greek, can use the adjective as a noun without adding the word men. Thus, hoi agathoi may be translated the good. And you know, in plural in English, yes, we do sometimes use it without going ahead and putting. But even so, like, let's see, isn't there some movie that it's the good and the something wrong? Yeah, it's old Clint Eastwood or somebody, you know. And but the good, the bad, and the what?
Ugly.
What? The good, the bad, the ugly, what? You know. Yeah. So it's still not as precise. It's not as precise as it is in Greek.
In fact, I believe that if you do that in any sort of composition class, you will get bled on.
Yeah.
Dangling modifiers. big enough. And by the way, just a trivia note, I understand that the word blonde is about the only word that we have left that has any sort of declension. If you are describing a blonde man, there's no E. If you're describing a blonde woman, there is an E.
Well, I didn't know that.
Now, that maybe somebody made that up, for all I know. But somebody told me that.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
That's because it's from French, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. So, looking at some of the exercises, let's just look at some of the exercises in paragraph 76.
Can I ask you something about 75?
Uh-huh.
So, that is context-driven, as far as the word that you're assuming is substituted in there. If you're sticking in the men.
There is, it's more than just context. Okay. That agathos, by the masculine gender there, is strongly suggesting man. So, it's more than just context-driven.
So, but it would be men as opposed to some other masculine male.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right. In other words, if you said agathos blepai summer, you know, it wouldn't be the good cow or the good son. You would understand this is the good man. Okay. That's right. It wouldn't be implying anything else. It's the good man. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty well a protocol thing. All right, agathē hei ekklesia. Kahe basileia kake. Now you can tell by my expression there just what that means. Oh, by the way, now you know what agathos or agathē, you know what that means by now, don't you?
Good.
All right. What would a cacophony be?
Noise.
Noise. Do you recognize the kaka? Mm-hmm. See, there it is. It means bad. Cacophony is from Greek, and it means bad sound. Cacophony. It means not really loud, but just a hodgepodge of unpleasant sounds. Cacophony. Okay, so here are our words now. Agathē, then the article, hey, and then ekklesia. You know what ekklesia is.
Church.
And then the conjunction, kai, and then the article, hey, and then basileia, which is kingdom. And then, so you've got a good at the beginning of it and a bad at the end of it. Notice that neither one of the adjectives has the article in front of it. So that means that this is attributive. It is predicate, I'm sorry. Yes, this is predicate. So it's saying, now you could say literally, you could say like, good is the church. But in English, we'd say the church is good and the kingdom is evil. Now in English, we don't always have to put in the verb either. We could say, the church is good and the kingdom evil. See, that would make good or bad. That would make good sense to say, the church is good and the kingdom bad. Now this word, kakos, means bad, but it can mean morally bad and everything. But the word for evil is actually a different word. It is paneros. Paneros. So we'll be strict and say bad. The church is good and the kingdom bad. All right. Now look at the second one for a difference. He kake kardia ton anthropon genoske thanaton. Now there you can see that the article precedes the adjective. Therefore, we're going to have an attributive thing here. You can guess what cardia is, can't you? All right. So you have the bad heart, ton anthropon. Now that's genitive. So it's of the men. The bad heart. And the funny thing is, it's singular. The bad heart. But then it's of the men. So it's just like collectively they're all exhibiting a bad attitude. And then you go back to your singular verb agreeing with the subject, which is heart. Nose, thanaton, death. That's right. So the bad heart of the men knows death or is knowing death.
You mentioned once upon a time that what you use death as an example, where we might talk about death as a concept, and we wouldn't put the article before mm-hmm. it. And you said that the Greeks might.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not here in this case.
Right. Right.
Why is that?
I think it's just because he's probably not wanting to introduce that wrinkle.
Okay.
Make it, you know, difficult.
Okay.
I think that's probably why. Sentence 3, hoi apostoloi blepusi tus mikrus oikus kai tas kakas hadus. Okay, once again, kind of follow it through. Hoi apostoloi, and you know what apostoloi would be.
Apostles.
Uh-huh. So you can figure out that's the apostles. Hoi apostoloi blepusi, sees, tus mikrus oikus. Now, tus mikrus, you can probably figure out after a little bit what mikrus would be.
Small.
Uh-huh. Small. Microscope. Tus mikrus oikus. Now, the oikus is houses. Don't worry too much about it. I know it's frustrating, you know, to have to be turning back and everything. So don't worry too much about that. I'm going to show you what it means. So you've got the apostles are seeing tus mikrus oikus. That means we've got an attributive position of the adjective here. So it's small houses, kai tas kakas hadus. Now that hadus is from a word hadas that means way or road. So it's the bad ways. Now sometimes in our context would make the difference, you know, whether you want to say the way or the road. If it's a way of, if it's a talking about behavior, you'd probably translate it way. But if it's used in a literal sense of, you know, a street or something, then you'd say road.
So, I think maybe last lesson, the one before, we were talking about, you were mentioning the article. And you said even though that you've got the definitive there, that doesn't mean that there's only one. Is that right?
Say that again.
I'm probably not wording it right, but I thought you said something to the effect that just because we see, you know, the definitive article in front of mm-hmm. a noun, we can't assume that there's only one of that thing.
Yeah. If I said that, probably what I meant was that in this sentence, it's specifying, it's pointing to one. But that doesn't mean that there's only one in all the world.
Okay.
Now,
all right, so my follow-up question that where I'm thinking is, you know, when Paul talked about the way,
mm-hmm.
so, but yet when we read that, we understand that that's the one way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And is that fair there, or
yeah,
is that
yeah,
or is that
yeah.
worded differently in the yeah, Greek somehow, yeah. or is well, that a context thing?
I think it's a context thing.
Okay,
I think so, because you would be, I mean, you would be able to say, you know, like if I said hit the road, what road? You know, but in another context, I might be specifying, but like I would say, you know, you need to take Interstate 65 or something, specifying it. Mm-hmm. So the article gets to be a big thing. Like if you're talking about God, if you have the article, then it's specifying God like the Father, and if it doesn't have the article, except that's not so. Yeah, that's not so. Some argue that. Jehovah's Witnesses like to try to argue that. They absolutely cannot be consistent.
Are you talking about John 1?
Yes.
But can you I was going to ask about that, because it's sort of a predicative, is that the right word? Predicative construct there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they try to argue something based on that.
You can find a hatheos used of Jesus. You can find merely theos used of God, and vice versa. It just varies. It varies. And you can just take John 1, just that one place, and find that. So you can't establish who God is merely by whether the article is in front of theos or not. Again, context plays a very big part in this. In Greek, theos is the word for God. In the Old Testament, it would be Elohim, which was a plural form, and the thing about it is Elohim sometimes means gods, sometimes it means the true God. Form remains exactly the same, plural form. So theos sometimes means an idol, sometimes it means the true God. It means a deity. And so the context then would show whether this is the true deity or an idol. But the thing that you can't do is you just can't decide. You can't decide by the article whether this is talking about Jesus or not. You can't make an argument on that. The fact is, Jesus is divine. He's just divine. Now, it's only if you're trying to prove he's not divine, you're going to try to look for all this stuff. And you can't sustain it. Usage does not support that.
So is there any variation between whether you're talking about the Father or Jesus versus heathen gods?
Not so far as
versus like heathen gods, like a lowercase g?
Okay. What kind of a distinction? You mean like with the article?
Is the article distinction?
I'd have to look, you know, various circumstances up, but usually, all right, for example, Paul says that we know that no idol is anything there and no God in the world, something like that. It might be singular there probably most of the time when theos is referring to idol gods. It's probably plural. So, but that's a thing. Now, that's when it's really, really fun. And to me, one of the best things about Greek is to get to the point where you can just get your Bible, find the passages you want to study, and look and see the way it's done. Now, that's something I would really enjoy doing with some students. And because I could learn a lot from that also. Okay, so I believe that you have seen here the ideas. I don't know whether we need to look at that any more. I don't know whether it would do any good to do that or not.
Well, I don't know if it would be too much, but what do you think about just reading through the answers, like in the exercises?
Yeah.
If nothing else, just because we have it on tape,
okay.
We could study it.
Okay. All right, so we've got sentence one, the church is good and the kingdom bad. And sentence two is the bad heart of the men knows death. And sentence three, the apostles are seeing the small houses and the bad ways. And sentence four, now this one illustrates hoi douloi, hoi kakoi. This is the attributive position. But it is an alternate way of doing it. I've already told you about it. But it would still mean the bad servants. And he gives a footnote here saying that this term luo sometimes means to destroy. So you wouldn't say the bad servants are loosing. Here you'd say the bad servants are destroying the house of the apostle, or the apostle's house. You put it either way. It's just that you always put a possessive in the genitive. Without, you don't have an apostrophe S in Greek. So it'd be the bad servants are destroying the apostle's house. Sentence 5 is the bad. Here we have a substantive. There is no bad something else. It's masculine. So it's the bad men are destroying Tahiran, the temple. And sentence 6 is the Lord of life. All right, now look at the footnote right there, Trevor. Abstract nouns and nouns such as zoe often have the article where it is omitted in English. Okay? So we would just translate of life, not of the life here. So the Lord of life, Egero, raises up tous nekrous, the dead. The Lord of life is raising the dead. Now, technically, there's no difference, but in the connotation of English, there is a difference. If I said, the Lord of life raises the dead, then it would be the idea that's what he does. But if I said, is raising the dead, then it would imply he's in the process of doing it. You know. All right, sentence 7, hoilagoi tes aletheos, Vidaspasi tus alus apostolus. Alright, the words of truth. This illustrates the same point. Because even though it's tes aletheos, we don't translate the article into English. The words of truth. Now we could, it'd be okay. The words of truth. The words of truth are teaching the other apostles.
And that's because truth's in genitive there.
Yeah, the words of truth, yes. The words of truth. Which would just mean these are the words that are associated with truth. These are true words. That'd be just a different way of putting it. The words of truth. The words consisting of truth. Are teaching the other apostles. And remember, these are not scriptures.
Right.
These are his exercises to teach the language. It is funny sometimes you almost get to trying to expound this. No, you're wasting your time. It's not scripture. So don't try to expound it.
Yeah. I like the first one. The church is good, the kingdom is bad.
That's very non-productive there. So don't try to expound it. He's just using words, Bible words, New Testament words, but not from verses. Now later on he will do that, but it'll be a good while. All right, and then in 8, hoi dikaioi. Now, dikaios is from just or righteous. Dike is the goddess of justice. And when Paul was shipwrecked, they said, he has escaped the shipwreck, but Dike or the goddess Dike has not suffered him to live. So that's the word, that's this word here, DK, goddess of righteousness, justice. So here it means the righteous men, and in English, we could just say the righteous are receiving. We wouldn't have to, again, the plural English, we can sometimes mimic the Greek there. But technically, it is saying the righteous men. I'm not sure how much the Greeks would have been thinking that it's males as much as, you know, more or less like we are just people. You know, the people, the righteous people. The righteous people are receiving the gifts of the Lord. Okay? Now here we've got to figure something out, and it's the case and gender and all that kind of stuff that will help us do it. Because it goes on and says, ta kala, All right, now take a moment and look. Ta kala does not go with tu kuri'u. Ta kala goes with ta dora. See that? Mm-hmm. And yet it's separated from ta dora by tu kuri'u. So that we're going to put the ta kala with ta dora, even though it's separated by tu kuri'u. So it would be the righteous people are receiving the beautiful. Now this is kala, not kaka. So it's kala, kalas, good or beautiful. The good gifts of the Lord. And it'd be like the gifts of the Lord, the good ones. And it'd be almost in Greek emphasizing these are gifts of the Lord. And they're good ones. So, but in English we would just say the gifts, the good gifts of the Lord. You lose a little something.
Would you try to arrange it like you did the first time?
Well, you could. You could. You just have to remember, you know, for your own purposes, of course you could. But if you're trying to make a translation, it's going to have to be one that reads well. And so if it's clumsy, it won't read, you know, people won't like it. They won't go for it. It's got to be good English. But I always think that if you've got to balance the idea of being literal as you can. I like to be as literal as you can and yet make it as good English as you can. All right, number 9, we go back to a kakas here, not a kalas. Kalas is good and kakas is bad. So this is the hakakas, so it's a substantive. The bad man, blepe tain eriman, kai tus eskatus orkus. All right, so the bad sees the desert and the last houses, like the last houses before you go into the desert or something like that, I suppose is what it means. But again, let's not waste too much energy expounding it. So the bad man sees the desert and the last houses. All right. Number 10. Now we don't have a verb expressed in number 10. Protoi hoi douloi. Eskatoi hoi kurioi. First are the slaves. Last are the lords. Except we wouldn't put it in English like that. Protoi is first because it's emphasized. Eskatoi is first because it's emphasized. But we'd say the servants are first. The lords are last, or the masters are last. But the Greek is emphasizing first. First are the servants or slaves. Last are the lords. And that wouldn't come across as quite as good English. And that's sad in a way, because see in John 1, we have that problem there. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Whereas in the Greek, it is emphasized and it's emphatic that the Word was God. God was the Word. But you can't see that, because if you brought it out in English, God was the Word, it would convey the wrong idea. So it's kind of sad. And to me, that's another reason. That's one of the reasons why knowing Greek helps you somewhat.
You can see the emphasis.
Yeah, that's right. All right, in 11, we have a dative. Te ekklesia, te mikra. All of that is, it's in agreement. It is singular. It is dative. It is feminine. So what we would say is to the small church, to the small church, graphe hakurios lagan agathon. The Lord is writing a good word. Now, notice that there is no article connected with lagan and no article connected with agathon. When there is no article, you cannot distinguish between attributive and predicate. But in this construction, it couldn't mean anything else.
Because you would have had two verbs.
Yeah, and you'd be saying, to the small church, the Lord is writing, and a word is good. Well, that wouldn't make any sense. Right. So it is obvious that what he's saying is the Lord is writing a good word to the small church. And so you can rearrange it in different ways. You can start off to a small church, or to the small church, the Lord is writing a good word. Or you could say, the Lord is writing a good word to the small church. You could arrange it either way. Number 12, tus pistus. Pistus is from faithful, pistos, faithful. To the faithful ones. Now here, I believe you'd almost have to come out with the subject itself. You'd have to express the subject, because otherwise you'd be saying, let's see. Yeah, you just have to change the whole thing around and say, the faithful man is seeing the faithful men. So you could not say, the faithful is seeing the faithful, because that would not convey it at all. So you'd have to, in this case, you would have to put the substantive. You'd have to say, the faithful man is seeing the faithful men. And then in 13, eskatoi hoi douloi hoi kakoi, protoi hoi hui oi hoi agafoi. Almost sounds like Chinese, doesn't it?
Yeah.
With all the oi's there. So, literally we'd have, last are the bad servants, without any verb, last the bad servants, first the good sons. So we would say, the bad servants are last, the good sons are first. Number 14, hapuias tu eskatu adafu blepetas kalas ekklesias tu kariu. So we'd have the son of the last brother. Who would like to know what that means? Anyway, the son of the last brother sees the good churches of the Lord. And then 15, alein parabolein legamente kake basileia. So we have an accusative, alein parabolein. So that would be another parable, legamen. We are saying another parable to the bad kingdom. Another parable we are saying to the bad kingdom. All right, 16, prote he ecclesia, eskate he ale basileia. So the church is first, the other kingdom is last. All right, then 12, tais pistais to the faithful, lege hakurius. The Lord is saying, parabolein kalein, a good parable, kai tois pistois. Now, what we've done here is we have a compound indirect object, because we have dative tais pistais and tois pistois. So what he's saying is the Lord is saying a good parable to the faithful women and to the faithful men. Okay? Because of the gender. The contrast there in the gender. So that's what you would know.
So why? Is that just to emphasize the men over the women or something?
Again, it's probably here just to illustrate the different way it can be done.
Right.
That's what I think that's what it is here. Yeah. Yeah, he's just illustrating the different ways it can be done. So you've got tais pistais to the faithful women, lege hakurius, the Lord is saying, parabolein kalein, another parable, kai tois pistois, and to the faithful men. Okay? Number 18, ha agathos graphe agatha, hakakas kaka. So the good man is writing good things, the bad man bad things. And then number 19, agathos hadoulos. Now there is definitely your predicate position. The servant is good. Kai lege kala. And says good things. And then number 20, he aletheia pistei. Kai he hora kake. So, the truth is faithful and the hour bad. Okay. All right, so that's that I feel pretty good about what we were able to do tonight. So what we need to do is think about what do we need to do? What do I need to show you in the next one or two? I know, you know, we're not going to have any more.
Can I ask you a couple of questions about this one?
Yeah.
One, just to help me remember because I've forgotten my English. So the participle, what exactly is a participle in English again? It's a verb being
It's a verbal form used as an adjective. And the running man is an example.
And so they pretty much, if I remember right, they pretty much always end in ing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I know I'm going off tangents a little bit here, but I, just to help me remember, there was what, like a gerund?
It's a verbal infinity? Used as a noun.
Okay.
Running is an activity that I used to do a lot of. So, that's a gerund.
And then, what, an infinitive verb used as an adverb? Is that right?
No, it can be used in many different ways. You use to, you know, in English you have to, but it can be used as a subject, as it can be used as a noun.
Okay.
There you could say to exercise is a thing that everybody needs to do. To exercise. That's an infinitive used as a noun, subject. It can be used in different ways.
Okay.
So.
All right. And then when the verb is missing, can you say in general if the verb is missing, it's going to be is, or is it only in this particular construct?
Probably. Now, unless the only, in fact, there was one here. Let me turn to that. And I'll show you. I'll be able to do a better job just using the one that he used here. All right. Just a minute. I'll find it. Okay, look in 18, number 18, where you have ha-agathos, graphe, agatha, ha-kakas, kaka. Now, that would mean the good man is writing good things, the bad man, bad things. See, I didn't express the verb that second time, and it would be writing. But in most of the cases where you have like 20, hey, aletheia pistei, the verb to be understood is going to be is. So you are correct in that regard.
Okay, so that there is a context.
Yes.
Sensitivity. Yeah. All right, in 18, just have to remember, the dots, they're semicolon. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It can be used as a colon or a semicolon. In this case, it is a semicolon.
Some questions.
Okay. Do you have any, Greg?
I need a lot more English than I do Greek at this point.
All right. Well, I will give it some thought and try to decide what the best thing we could do with another lesson or two, you know, to wrap it up. I think the one thing we need to do is we need to talk about tenses. We need to have a lesson where we talk about tenses a good bit. And what I think I'll do is just take a number of the lessons where tenses are introduced, talk about tenses, and then probably talk about participles.
Okay.
So probably that'd be what we could wind up with, just have two more lessons and one of them dealing with tenses and then another one dealing with participles.
I think I may have mentioned this to you before, but I've got some computer software that it's doing a lot of the work for me.
Mm-hmm.
That I can go look up any verse and then see the Greek written mm-hmm. out, or and then say mm-hmm. here's the word that it connects to, and it tells me the declension of mm-hmm. the case and
mm-hmm.
tense, whatever. And really, kind of where I am is, okay, I can get that very easily and cheat. But at that point, what I do with this information, how do I map this to English is, okay, this is this tense, but what does that really mean? What's right. the implications right. at that point?
Right.
So, just, right. like they have different tenses. But even beyond that, just some of the little rules that, you can always say.
And to me, one of the things about studying Greek is learning not to be too impressed by someone that is going to throw a Greek argument at you. I don't find too many things that can be absolutely sustained by an argument from Greek. And I've found more often than not somebody's trying to snow you if they're doing it. So there are a few things that I think you have a real point to be made, and it really affects the exegesis of the passage. But most of the time, to me, the study of the Greek, I love it. I just enjoy it. I'm still rusty. I'm real rusty in what I have been able to do. It kind of embarrasses me sometimes to answer or be saying something, and I'd really love to check that out more before I say much about it. But anyway, it does affect, like I can read a passage in my Greek Testament there, and I can evaluate it. I can evaluate it, even as rusty as I am. I can evaluate that passage, and I like it for that reason.
What do you mean by evaluate as opposed to just translating?
Well, in other words, when I say evaluate, I can see the translation reflected in it. I can see why it is translated this way, or that's the basic thing. I can evaluate the translation by looking at it. I can say, oh yes, I understand it. Mm. I know why it's translated that way. I can see it, and but I remember Dennis.